Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Voices That Cook. Whew. I don't know where that exhalation of air came from, but this is not a way I was expecting this show to start. But hello, I am William Nunn, who is a voice actor who likes to cook. And I talk to other voice actors in this show who also like to cook. And that is pretty much the prime setup of this whole experience that you will be listening to today. And today I have a very special guest who is also just a lovely person in general and a wonderful friend. It is the lovely, gorgeous Eleanor Enwin. Hello, Eleanor. How are you today?
Oh, shucks. Hello. I'm good. Very good. Thank you for having me on.
Very much my pleasure to have you on. And if you guys have listened to One Shot's D&D Character Podcast before, you are very likely familiar with how delightful and awesome and lovely Eleanor is with playing characters such as Zephon and the all-evil Lucifer. We'll say there's a bit of complexity there, but definitely Lucifer. Those are two very fun episodes to do. And speaking of, I am soon going to be, it's probably going to be February by the time I start actually putting in the first touches of season two of One Shot. So Odysseus Claw's journey will begin anew, or he'll be on a new quest this time after his exploits in the horrid, hot land of Avernus. So if for some reason none of you have heard the season finale, it's worth going through if you would like to see what's going on with season two, or at least know what's coming. But I can definitely say, if I were to look at Lucifer right now and say anything specific, it would be, do you realize what you've done? More along the lines of like, you probably would not have been aware of the action you caused, but if you decided not to help Odysseus, probably less problems would arise, would be the way I would describe it. But I won't spoil it for anyone who wants to listen to that episode before starting season two, if it comes out by the time this recording is online. But I do want to also mention that Eleanor's had lots of awesome experiences with podcasts and audio dramas, which we're definitely going to touch on. But of course, we will be later on talking about food as well. So I know I should probably put a disclaimer usually in the beginning of each episode, but I'll just go ahead and just say it now. If you have an empty stomach, you might want to rectify that before listening to this episode, because we're going to probably have stomachs growling by the time this episode wraps up. So, with all that being said, I'm going to go ahead and ask you my first question, Eleanor. What got you started in voice acting?
Okay, so voice acting is a bit of a weird start for me, because I went to university and I did English literature and drama. And within that was like a little section of it, which was like radio plays, which was really fun. We got to like do some recording and like studio and learn a lot about all these techniques and things. And then I kind of just left it at that for a while. And I went down a completely different route. And I worked doing costuming and making and designing costumes for theatres in London. Did that for a few years. And then I kind of realised, I don't really want to do this anymore. It's great, but it's just not for me, really. And then I was super into playing D&D, still am, love it. And I was doing a paid game where I was being dungeon master for a big group of people. Didn't really know a lot of them that well. Only knew a couple of them. And then after the game, I got a message from one of them who I didn't really know at all. And he sort of went, so Eleanor, I know that like we don't know each other that well, but you're really good at this. Like, have you thought maybe of going into it? And that moment kind of clicked for me, being like, well, I do really enjoy it, and I really liked it at uni. Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. And I kind of got looking more and more into it from there, and yeah, here we are.
That's awesome. I usually tell people that if you need any sort of free training for voice acting and or even just acting in general or improvisation, anything to really help with your creative mindset, I do think D&D is the best thing to do. It is, you get to be with other friends who get to act alongside you. You get to come up with things off the top of your head. You get to create characters. You get to create emotions, responses, reactions, all these things that are very important to learn. And just seeing how it all, you can literally create anybody you want to, no matter what you look like, what you are, what you were, you know, there's you can do whatever. And it's amazing to see that all be handled in a way that is very helpful and beneficial to anyone who wants to pursue something like what we do. And I definitely look forward to not only playing D&D more in the near future, but I also get to start my own campaign soon, which I'm very excited about.
Ooh, nice.
My first ever D&D campaign I get to be a DM for, and it's not going to last like 30 minutes.
Yep.
Nice. I think it was a little over, no, it was about 2 years. It was during 2020. We were trying to do a Mass Effect D&D style campaign, and one of my friends got sick during the session. So she had to kind of bow out, and my friend and I were like, well, we'll just continue next time. And then it just never happened. Mm. So I was always like, I kind of want to do this again at some point. And then the season finale of One Shots happened, where I got to basically be both Odysseus Claw and the DM and be able to literally make the battle against the Dark Unicorns happen. And I was initially so nervous about it, but it was such an amazing experience. I can't wait to do it somewhat more regularly with a new campaign. And it definitely makes me want to see, like, what could I do with that to add into season two of One Shots, while also see how that's going to help me with any of my other creative endeavors, which I'm sure that's been some major benefits to you as well. But I also really wanted to mention that there is a particular project you and I both got to be involved in called Hounds of Bedlam from Cold Open Stories.
Yes.
I'm still really proud of how that turned out. I'm still so glad I got to make it in that. Was that one of your, oh my gosh, I can't believe I got to be in this sort of casting things for yourself? Or was there ever another one where you're like, holy crap, I can't believe I'm in this?
I think that was kind of the first like moment where it was like, whoa, I got in this. What? Okay. Cause I like, that was the point where I just moved and everything was chaotic and I didn't know what was going on. And then suddenly it was just this email of, oh, by the way, I thought, whoa, okay, nice. That's awesome. And then finding out like everyone else who was in it and taking part, like all the other voice actors, I was like, oh, okay, this is really something. And then listening to it afterwards was just, oh, so cool. So cool.
For those of you who don't know, Hounds of Bedlam is set in the Warhammer 40K universe, and it's a very dark 5-part story, but it is definitely worth your time. And I got to play a guardsman named Mauder, who is only in the first episode, but I really had a good time playing him and getting some direction from Colin on it. And it was sincerely fun, but also just, it felt like I was doing something right being able to be in a project like that. That was also probably my first, holy crap, I can't believe I'm in this. Because I think I got cast, I might've gotten cast for that either before or after The Pursuit of Verlinia. Those are definitely the two where I'm like, I still pinch myself every now and then that I'm in that. And when I saw all the familiar faces that were in it, you included, I was just blown away. Like, how did this happen?
Yeah, you definitely felt that big time. And yeah, as like just one of those things where it's like, oh, I literally have grown up with like Warhammer and Warhammer 40K. And then it was just... really cool is the only way I can really put it into words, to be a part of something that was so like, whoa, this is something that was a part of my childhood. Wow. Like, yeah.
Do you have a favorite faction?
Oh, that's a tough question, and one that I often debate with my older brother, because he's kind of the one that got me into it more. But not gonna lie, okay, this is gonna bit of a tangent. Might be sound a little bit weird, but sure. Actually, we've been playing a lot of Blood Bowl recently, and kind of steered away from kind of the main Warhammer 40k stuff and gone into finding new kind of different avenues. And playing Blood Bowl, I've been Wood Elves have just been my main, just all the time. I love mm-hmm. Wood Elves. They're so much fun. Or orcs. They're also pretty fun, but I think Wood Elves are just a bit more interesting.
That's understandable. I have yet to do legit, you know, playing with the minis and such with Warhammer. I kind of would like to at some point. In fact, I was literally thinking, what would I do if I actually ever were to jump into that? Because I know it's an investment if I were to get into that hobby full time. But I know I would want to at least start out somewhere either similar to Modern, where I would think it'd be kind of fun to see where that kind of grunt soldier could lead into a certain point in his career if he were to survive enough battles or whatever. But also, of course, you're controlling armies and all that. And so there's where, you know, I really like the Space Marines. In fact, the first thing of Warhammer I ever saw that made me go, holy shit, this is so fucking cool, was the Astartes animated short films that were on YouTube. Ooh,
yes, and they're amazing.
They really are, especially when they're made by I think one dude, and maybe he had help from a couple of other people, but it's insane. Like, there's little to no dialogue in either of those, and it's all just so fantastically well-crafted and put together. And I knew from seeing that I would be willing to be Space Marines. But then I also checked out the first audiobook for Eisenhorn, and now it's like being an Inquisitor could be cool. So there's that too. And there's so much in Warhammer that's insane. But what really got me into Warhammer initially, though, was I was actually trying to find ambience for a Rick and Morty audio drama I was putting together. And I needed something that sounded like a lot of fighting was happening in the background, like gun blasts, explosions, all that sort of stuff from ambience. And there was one for Warhammer that sounded perfect for it. And I kind of thought to myself, if I'm going to use something from Warhammer before putting it in here, I should at least be aware of it somewhat. And that's what led me to Astartes. And then, of course, there are so, so many audio dramas for Warhammer that it's insane. Like, I could count the amount of how many audio dramas I've at least have wish listed and maybe listened to that are about as long as my hand or my arm. Sorry, my arm and hand, I should say. There's so many. And I gotta say, even though they're not technically with Games Workshop or Black Library, Coloban Stories does put out some of the best Warhammer audio content I've ever heard. And Hounds of Bedlam, even though we're both in it, it's still fantastically well done. On the Hunter's Watch might be my new favorite. One of the newest one that they did. But also Yesterday's Enterprise. That was really good, too. I think that's what it was called yesterday. No, wait, not yesterday. Is it yesterday? Yesterday's News. Sorry. Yesterday's Enterprise is Star Trek The Next Generation. But I was definitely very interested in pursuing Warhammer further, knowing its audio content was so vast, and I wanted to listen to more audio fiction for influence on my end. And just it just led me to all sorts of different things with primarily the Space Marines and like guys like Garrow and Eisenhorn. That was an audiobook for him, but. So as of right now, I do see myself being more willing to go for the Space Marines, but see where that could go. Nice. If I were to ever do a faction for Warhammer myself at some point. And if that happens, I could have some Wood Elves and Space Marines team up to fight off some monsters. That could be fun.
Oh, absolutely. Like, why not? That sounds great.
And speaking of really awesome things, one project that you've done that I am really I wanted to check out earlier, but didn't get into until later on, that I was very, I could tell a lot of people were blown away by it, but then of course that led to me also being blown away by it. What can you tell the audience about The Way Station?
Ooh, so The Way Station, it is actually another one that was like, wow, I can't believe I'm in this. It was a very cool, pretty epic moment in time. But it is a sort of science fiction mystery, it's hard to explain without giving a lot away.
There's definitely some scary elements. There's definitely mystery to it. And you kind of handle it through these recordings that pop up from someone who's trying to figure out what happened at the Way Station. And one thing I definitely remember while listening to it was hearing your character in it. And I would always just be like, happy whenever you'd pop up and start talking, even if you're going through a really intense situation. I'm still like putting my fist up in the air, like rooting for you and such, even though there's some pretty hectic things going on with multiple people. I'm just like, I hope you get out of this alive.
See, the weird thing is, I was listening back to it and I was kind of doing the same thing, and I was like, I know what happens, but I'm here like on the edge of my seat. But it's amazingly well written and directed as well, and all like the audio engineering that went into it is just, for such like a small team of sort of indie creatives, it's epic what they managed to produce.
It really is. And I'm really happy that we're getting a second season. I'm very curious about that. And I'm also just really happy that something like that exists for me to hear, because I definitely enjoy hearing shows that my friends are in, but I'm always really happy when it really just grabs me. And next thing I know, I've already listened to the whole thing. I've already gone through it within like, I think I listened to The Way Station within 3 or 4 days tops, something like that.
Whoa.
I was that into it, and I want to hear more. I want to see what else is going on. And, There's a lot of great stuff in there for it, and I'd really highly recommend, whether it's after this episode or if you decide to pause and just add it onto your Spotify playlist or whatever, go ahead and get yourself at least prepared to listen to The Way Station, because it is an intense experience, but one I think you'll really enjoy, especially if you want to hear how good the audio medium can be for a situation like this. And also, just as someone who's a fan of Deep Space Nine, Wormhole, Space Station, that just made me happy inside. But also, speaking of shows, there was another one that I listened to you in that you actually made yourself, Fashion and Foibles. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Oh, yeah, that's the one, Fashion and Foibles. That was a while ago.
that was one I also enjoy. I think I heard one episode, but I remember having a very pleasant experience while listening to it.
Oh.
So that's another one I will recommend for people to listen to. And with that, I know that we've both have had experience with audio dramas and such. Is there anything that you would really like to pursue that's maybe different from audio dramas? Like, would you like to do animation, video games, all that sort of stuff? I'm sure you would, but like, is there any that you're like, I would love to do this so much more than maybe someone else?
Oh, I would love to get into more sort of animation things, and probably also get into more mocap, not necessarily like video game mocap, although that would be amazing. But I kind of learned the other day that mocap just spans so much more, and especially like in London, I didn't realize quite how many mocap studios there were in London, because I'm like, London's like, it's big, but it's not like LA big, you know? And yeah, there are tons of little studios everywhere, so I'd love to get into that a bit more. But it will take a little bit more time, I think, for the UK to chill out a bit more on the older in studio things to, you know, pick up a bit more again.
fair. Mocap has definitely been an interest of mine too, mainly through watching Andy Serkis and such. But I have noticed, like, I'm not caught up on it yet, but I've seen a few episodes of Blade Runner Black Lotus, and with how fluid the movements of how everyone's moving around in the CG animation, I'm just like, is that mocap? Are they using mocap for this? And it would make sense to see that more in animation. So would you, with the animation side of mocap, is that more with CG animation, or have you seen it more with other things of animation that could be a bit more traditional, but just, you know, obviously match more of the movements of people doing stuff and such?
I've just seen it. It's just been used for so many things, kind of a mix of both, but then it's also like there are bits where it's been used just to get an idea of like very basic movements to use in, like, say, an advertisement for sportswear or something. It's really fascinating how it's evolved, because it's so different to how it was, say, like 2 years ago. The whole industry of mocap has just completely changed. And I guess that's in part due to, you know, how video games have made the industry boom and kind of really pushed forward the technology.
That is fair. That is definitely fair. And I have often told myself, if I were to ever get into mocap, I'd love to play a dinosaur. I think that would be really fun.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Have you ever told yourself, like, if you got to do mocap, is there anything that you would specifically want to play? Just because you can have all the dots and such on you can be whatever you want. What would you go for?
Oh, like a really, like, disgusting kind of creature, like something where I can use my, like, hyper-extendable joints to their full capacity and just creep everybody out.
I did not know that about your joints.
It's fun.
Can you do where I have a friend who can literally, like, move his fingers all the way back down to the back of his hand? Can you do stuff like that?
No, not quite to that extent, but maybe if I really tried hard enough it might work, but
let's not accidentally break.
Yeah, might not go so well.
These are all silly questions.
And that's what we like.
Yes, we like the city. Even being silly can help, like, get over, like, a nervous feeling with wanting to do an audition for something. I remember at one point really trying to do an audition for a project, and I kept trying to play it so seriously for the first couple of tries, and I did sort of a silly yell because I just did not like the mindset I was in for it. And then I read through it again and I just felt a lot more loosened up. And for some reason that helped me out a lot more. And I don't know if you've ever done something like that. That definitely makes me wonder if I was doing well. I'm sure everyone has their own processes and such, but sometimes just doing something really stupid in the middle of a serious circumstance can help at least make you feel less static, more less stagnant, I would say. And you feel a little bit more willing to move around some rather than just, I'm standing here trying to be serious with this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's almost like, I find it's like hitting a reset button or something and you kind of just go, like, back to it.
That's a good description for it. And I guess one of my other questions I wanted to ask involving voice acting with you specifically is, has there ever been anything that you've done that would you say is probably your favorite performance you've done so far?
Ooh, yes, but I can't talk about that one. So, I think probably other than that, I mean, I really love playing Freya in The Way Station. That was just so, it was really, really cool. I loved doing it. And doing the read-throughs with the group beforehand, it was great. But I think other than that, most of the things, like little performancey things, are actually quite, are things from quite a long time ago, like at university and stuff that we had to do for sort of like theatre company performances. Yeah, just little bits and pieces, but nothing that I can really recall.
Gotcha. I've done a little bit of theater myself too. I did have a theater class in college, but I didn't get to really do much performing. It was mainly just research. It was a lot of like learning about theater, and this was long before I wanted to be an actor, which I find kind of funny. Because like the only thing I remember performing in for that class was we kind of had to create something on the fly and just perform with a group of students. And we basically created our own rendition of Family Feud. And I was pretty much Steve Harvey. I was the game show host. And just, you know, just creating this sort of off the cusp sort of game show in front of everybody. And it was really fun. And I did get to go to a couple of plays that were free for me to go to because we got, you know, like the written consent of like, this is for a class, this is for a theater specifically. So you have to go and you see the show and you write an analysis for it. And it, there was one show I went to, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it was a really fun comedy. And then the other one was Romeo and Juliet. And I wish I would have, there are times where I wish I would have gone back to that show and experienced it with the mindset I have now, because I probably would have appreciated it a lot more than how I was when I was younger going, oh, come on, they could have checked each other's pulses and they would have been fine. They wouldn't have had to go out like that. But I totally understand why it went the way it did with, you know, how it was written and thought of and all that good stuff, especially after literally going through Hamlet and Macbeth this weekend while recovering from my booster shot. The David Tennant one and the Patrick Stewart one, those are the ones I watched, and they were phenomenal. So now I'm like Shakespeare obsessed right now. So I'm now just kind of like, if I go and experience Romeo and Juliet again, I will want to look at that with a more appreciative look, because I now kind of have a better understanding of how Shakespeare works with learning from Carlisle the Priest and such, who I hope will be on the show at some point. But yeah, theater also is really good to go through. And what were some stand-up performances for you in theater, my friend?
Stand-up performances I've watched.
I'm sorry. I meant to say like that you were in. Like you
Okay. Gotcha. Probably. I mean, I think one of the last ones I did in theatre was Dancing at Lanassa by Michael Frayn. That was a beautiful play. And I was very fortunate I got to do it with two amazing directors, one of which was from kind of around the area that the sort of, it was kind of set in Ireland, and the other director was brought like an amazingly fresh look at it, because she's just got such an interesting view, and they kind of try to modernize it a little bit but then bring in other elements. And I got to be with an amazing cast as well. Everyone was fantastic, super fun, supportive, and yeah, that was a really good performance. Just in total, the whole play, I think everyone did a cracking job.
I'm not familiar really with that. I'm not familiar with that show. What would you say would be the synopsis for it, and who did you play?
Oh, so it's basically about four sisters that live together in Ireland, sort of around, I can't remember the year exactly, but it's sort of early 1900s, I believe. And it's just kind of about their relationships together and their growth together, growing apart, growing older. And it's quite a beautiful story that's not really told very often in theatre, I don't think. I think a lot of, especially now, a lot of plays that are being written, it's very much about, you know, having that drama factor, having the wow factor, having that turning point, that certain something that's going to really capture the audience and get all the critics raving about it. But it's just something very refreshing to have a play that's just very down to earth and very real, and sort of being able to act in that realistic setting is very different and very nuanced and a challenge, but it paid off for sure. For sure.
That's awesome. If for some reason I can ever travel that direction and see you in a play, that would be awesome.
One day, perhaps.
One day. And also one day, I hope to come over there and make you some delicious food, because that's going to be our next thing to talk about. What got you started in cooking, my friend?
Ooh, what got me started in cooking? To be honest, curiosity. I was that weird kid that was like, Mom, I'm going to bake a cake. No, I don't need a recipe. Just give me the ingredients. And was just kind of like rootling through the kitchen, finding like, oh, that's flour. I know Mum puts those in cakes. Sugar, I think she puts that in. Salt, maybe, who knows? Sprinkles, yep, they go on top. I know that much. And I would make these, looking back on it, disgusting creations, awful things. And I would bring them to my mum, bring them to our next door neighbours and be like, here, try the thing I made, and bless them all for eating it and smiling and going, yeah, that's really good. That's lovely. And then probably just going out as soon as I've left and spitting it in the bin. But, you know, bless them for humouring the small child.
Oh, that's funny. That reminds me. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before. When I was younger, I really wanted to make a pizza soup that would be essentially pizza sauce with pepperoni, chopped up cheese sticks, and probably cheeses and all that sort of stuff all just mixed in. And for all I know, it would probably be not the greatest soup, not terrible, but probably not great, and would probably cause some bodily reactions that would be not happy. But that's definitely what came to my mind upon hearing your story for that. I like that we both had ideas for that, but you actually went and did it. So I applaud you for it. At least for going the extra mile of literally like, I know this is going to work, even though it probably was bad. So when did you actually, well, do you remember what was the first thing you made that you were like, this is actually legit good?
I don't think I remember the first thing. I just remember when I was younger, I did then, you know, get into making cakes, accepting that recipes were needed. I used to make some cakes with my mum or just by myself or with friends when I was really little. I do remember my grandma being a massive fan of like just box cakes because she couldn't bake to save her life, bless her. I do remember the few times she did try to bake from scratch and it just ended up, you know, like almost like a brick, or like her cooking would just be like a very post-war, well, we've got our rations, so let's use them up. she wasn't the best influence, but my mum was, you know, happy to go along with it. Always in it. If it was a Welsh recipe, she would be on top of it like that. Bara brith or like Welsh cakes all the time, nonstop. I wasn't complaining at all.
I've never had a Welsh cake before.
Ooh, they're very fun. They're like the little thin, like you do them on like a hot stone plate. And these little thin kind of almost like warm, soft shortbread, I guess is like the texture to describe, with the little bits of raisin in as well. And you just put some butter on the top and, oh, they are fantastic. And really, really worryingly Moorish. Like I could just eat like 20 of them in a row.
I definitely I feel like after making pizza, I definitely feel like I can start to understand some of the ways of handling bread and, in some retrospect, some respect, cakes of some sort with how you do flour and everything else. But I keep telling myself, like, don't ever learn how to make caramel cake, because I know if I do, I'll never stop. It's one of those things where it's like, I love it so much, and I try to only have it during special occasions like Thanksgiving or Christmas or my birthday. But if I learn how to make it, I know I will make it quite frequently, because it is my favorite cake in the world. And obviously, I'm willing to try out more cakes and such, but that would be my kryptonite for sure, would be making that and eating it forever.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that I have like a bad habit of being like, oh, I'm bored and hungry. I have like half an hour. I'll go on. I'll just make a batch of Bailey's brownies. That's fine. And sometimes it gets to the point where people are like, Eleanor, did you make brownies again? Did you make Bailey's brownies again? Yeah, just a tad, maybe. Maybe I made like two batches in the space of 2 days. It's fine.
just tell them I was there. You had them because I was there eating them with you.
Yeah.
One thing I definitely would love to try at some point next time I'm in Europe is there's when I I'm sure there's going to be different stuff going on where you are in London, but I visited France many years ago, and I just remember having a lot of bread. That was a lot of what I had over there, and I don't remember any other major standout things, because I was a much pickier eater back then than I am now. So if I were to come and visit you, are there any particular things you would want to introduce me that would probably not be here in America, as far as food?
Oh, plenty of things as far as food goes. To be honest, England has a little bit of a reputation with its food. But to be honest, if you know where to go, especially in places like London, where I live, it's, you know, you can easily find great food, especially all around Soho. There's actually a great little French patisserie that's sort of just down as you kind of get towards more like Piccadilly, Chinatown kind of area. And it's fantastic. The patisseries are just amazing and not crazy London prices, which is great. That's a tip for anyone. If you're coming to London and you want to eat good food, just go to Soho, because you'll get good food at not ridiculous prices.
That's good.
Yep.
Saving yep. some money that way is definitely good. And if I were to have you over here, I would probably make you my birria tacos. That would be what I would make for you.
Yes, that sounds amazing.
Yes, and I can't wait to make them at some point. Enchiladas are going to be my thing this week. That's going to be what I'll be making. But at some point, I do want to. I had mentioned this on a recent episode. I do want to try where if you let the fat sit with everything after you've marinated it and just let it sit in the fridge and let all of it become solid and go up to the top, you just take that out with a spoon and you put it in something else. And then when you're ready to heat your tacos on a skillet or griddle, whatever you're using, then add in the refrigerated fat to the skillet, so that way it all just mixes and blends without you having to worry about your shells falling apart or anything. It's actually going to be an easier way for them to all mix and cook and get that nice coloration without having to dunk your shells in really, really warm broth. Because I saw that and I thought, why did I never think of that? That's a much easier way to do it. Obviously, it would make the experience of making the birria tacos take a longer amount of time, because now it's a 2-day process rather than one you could do in 1 day. But also, that would be kind of easier for me just for the sake of scheduling. So if for some odd reason you were on your way here, I could make it the day before you arrive. And then when you're here, boom, I can go ahead and start the process of letting it all heat back up, let the fat sit in room temperature if need be, and then just whenever we're ready to eat, I'll mix them up and you dig in and do your very best not to cry as you eat.
That sounds amazing. I cannot promise that I won't cry as I eat because that sounds phenomenal.
Also, do you or do you not like cilantro?
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. But I have trouble is whenever I cook with it, I have a couple of friends who they have like the gene thing where it just tastes like soap and it makes me so sad.
Yeah. I know that feeling. My mom is allergic to cilantro, so if she ends up having any birria tacos, I just use parsley instead, which is a good substitute. But I do love me some cilantro with it. And that's another thing that makes me feel like it would be better to let the tacos not be dipped. So that way, when you want to put everything you want to put inside the tacos, which I usually like to do mozzarella or Oaxaca cheese if it's available, and obviously the beef, which I use chuck roast mainly, though whenever I move to Texas, if that still happens later this year, which hopefully it will, I'll have all the other beef options that I've seen, like there's oxtail, short ribs, all that I would love to blend in. So that way there's some meat variety within your taco, which, holy crap, I can feel my stomach just going, feed me. There, and then of course add in some diced onion and cilantro on top of your meat and cheese, and then you fold the taco over, and then you can start to add in your refrigerated fat to mix everything, and it's all beautiful. And oh man, I almost wonder if I want to do something like that with the enchiladas. No, don't do that, because the enchiladas are going to be sauced and everything else in the oven, so you don't need to do that, William. Just As fun as an experiment that would be, birria enchiladas, which, by the way, that actually does sound amazing. Oh, God, birria. Did I just say birria enchiladas?
That sounds,
I just said, I have to know if that's a recipe that exists. I have to know, because that could be what I might do this week. Oh, my God. Hang on. My stomach is talking right now. Yes, it is. There are YouTube video. There's a YouTube video that popped up for it. And oh my God, I'm. Oh boy. That's going to happen, Eleanor. That's going to happen this week.
Nice.
And I have to edit a narration. I have a D&D campaign to prepare for. I have all of this stuff I need to do this week, and that is going to be on top of all that. But God damn it, it will be worth it.
Nice. Yep, that sounds like absolute worthwhile.
Oh my gosh. Y'all cannot. I will put that in the description for y'all to see, and I'm gonna put that in the Discord right now, Eleanor, just so that you can see what I saw. Here we go. There we go. Just look at the thumbnail.
What?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
That looks wow. Okay, yeah,
Oh my gosh. This is the emotional reaction that we get when we see such a really glorious recipe just out of nowhere. Just something that just randomly comes to mind of like, has someone actually tried that? Has someone made that? And it does, and it makes you want to have, like, I feel, like, tears have not come down my eyes yet, but I feel like it's going to happen if I look at it again. Just, oh my God. Oh, wow. I would hug you right now if I could.
Oh, but alas, we have a whole ocean between us.
I know. This is why I want teleportation to exist.
Oh, the dream.
Could you imagine just I could make this and then just tell you, hey, food, dinner's ready, and just pop in through a tube or something, and all of your atoms start to spawn and pop up, and I want that experience with so many of my friends, but definitely you too, and just and then we just eat together, and then once we're through eating and hanging out, it's like, all right, you can go back to London. I'm gonna go to sleep because of the time difference. True. Oh my gosh. That's the first thing I'm gonna do whenever we finish up here, as I'm gonna be watching that and just, oh man. Have you had that experience also? I'm sure you have, but like, is there one that comes to mind where you just saw something and you're just like, oh, I have to make this?
Oh, so many things. So many things. What was the most recent one? Oh, I saw like a recipe for like these cakes that were chocolate cakes, but they used Guinness in them, but not to make it taste like Guinness, just to heighten the flavor of the chocolate. Made them the other week, and oh my goodness, I'm never making a chocolate cake without Guinness again. Like, it's magic.
I have to try a sample of that.
I'll post it to you. It's fine. It will work.
I may have to try that too. So yes, please do. And oh gosh, my stomach is arguing with me right now. It is. I don't know if y'all can hear it, but it is. It's almost like my dog Cliff. He just going. That's how he snorts.
Oh,
he's a big fat dog, but he's fun to hold, like a big baby. And he usually likes to devour all the food that he eats. And whenever he goes into a just full on pig out eating mode, because he will sound like a pig while eating, just going.
That's impressive.
He'll do that, and I have to pick up his bowl so that way he's not going to throw it all back up. He needs to let it all be swallowed and inhaled and savor the taste somewhat, which I think he's slowly slowing down a little bit, just a little bit. He's not at the point where I feel like I should stop doing that entirely. But I think the rhythm is starting to get to where it's almost like that experiment with The Office where Jim was trying to get Dwight to, you know, like whenever a beeping noise pops up, he gives him like a Tic Tac or something. And but then he hears the sound again. Dwight holds out his hand and there's nothing that Jim offers him. And he's like, my mouth tastes bad all of a sudden, or dry all of a sudden. It was I wonder if Cliffy's starting to get to that, is going to start getting to that point the more I do it. I don't know, but I have to get myself to stop doing that whenever I eat Outback Steakhouse cheese fries, though. That's definitely my favorite food in the world, and I devoured that before I went and saw the new Scream movie a few days ago. Because I will say, if you're ever wanting to just engorge yourself with food, probably best not to have a beer beforehand, because that's just going to make you a little extra full. But I do love me some loaded cheese fries. Those are delicious too. And I've made versions of that before, but not like the proper way. Not where you like peel the potatoes and turn them into fries. They're already frozen, which there's a lot of French fry recipes that have them be frozen, but at some point during your time making them. So I've always thought to myself, well, why not just grab frozen versions and then just do everything else you want to do? But at some point I want to do them properly. I do want to do that because that would be fun. Do you like to fry your own potatoes and such too?
Not particularly. I think I'm just more of a pasta person. So I love doing getting my timer on, getting perfect al dente pasta. And then like, I love making like big batches of like fresh pesto. And yeah, I think that's more where my carb brain kind of goes to, is just pasta. Give me all the pasta. Or bread. I do like making bread as well, but yeah. Do love
pasta. Pasta I do love. In fact, I think my favorite pasta I've made is chicken and shrimp scampi Alfredo pasta. It's the most creamy pasta I could make, but there's a lot of shrimp, there's a lot of chicken that's sliced up and mixed in. Let me see if I can pull up the recipe for it, and I can just read it off for y'all so y'all's stomachs can growl like mine is right now. Oh gosh. And of course, when I go to Instagram, the first thing I see is just absolutely delicious looking food from someone I'm following, which, by the way, I am on the voice that cooks on Instagram, which I'll mention that again later on here in a little bit. But okay, so here we go. Best pasta I've made in a long time. 3 giant chicken breasts with rib meat, shrimp, chicken parmesan sauce, and shrimp scampi sauce mixed together. And you use salt, pepper, Italian seasoning, garlic, minced onion, and parsley. Accent seasoning, parmesan cheese, shredded Romano lemon pepper, and too many penne noodles. That's what the recipe was.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great.
And if you end up looking at my Instagram for that post, you can swipe right and literally hear how it sounds. Just that sort of almost milky sounding noise. It is. I really feel like I should go eat something here. So why don't we get to the last question here? Because I don't think my stomach can take it anymore. What is your favorite recipe, Eleanor?
My favorite recipe is actually a recipe that I learned during, I think it was summer of 2020. And it was a recipe for bulgogi beef. And it was, I'd never done sort of beef in such a way that was, you know, you have to freeze it, thin slice, then fridge it with the whole marinade. And the marinade was something that I'd never really come across in terms of flavor profiles. It was using pear. And I was like, oh, putting pear with beef? Like, oh, interesting. But I guess that's what you got to do to get the flavor, because I never quite figured out all like the flavor profile of bulgogi beef. And then as soon as I learned the recipe, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense. And yeah, that recipe is wow. Yeah, I if I had a little bit more time, like, I would quite happily make that every single week. Just amazing.
I'm assuming it's a pretty long process, but ultimately worth it.
Yeah, it's a longer process, but oh, it pays off so well. Granted, I also make it longer, but like making the things, the gochujang, and all, like, I make all the pickles and everything on the side as well. So that probably adds a few hours.
Do you like to serve it with anything in particular?
Yeah, I love to do it with the bulgogi beef, and then I do sticky rice or some kind of rice, depending on what bowl I'm using. And then I do shredded carrots, pickled cucumber with like chilies and stuff in it. It's really good. And what was the other thing? Oh, I love doing it with mushrooms as well. That was the thing I did last time. That worked so well.
Nice. How do you spell that first word? I want to make sure just spell it out for me, because I want to know how to look it up because I would like to see how this all works.
I'm going to have to double check, because my dyslexic brain is just going, I don't know. There we go. So it's B-U-L-G-O-G-I.
Here we go. Oh, my. Ooh. Now, one thing I definitely really, really got into when I was visiting Texas was Korean food. So seeing that pop up was like, oh yes, I can understand. I can already tell why you'd love it. it looks amazing. Yeah. And speaking of amazing, it's been amazing having you on here, Eleanor. Thank you so much for coming on to Voices That Cook. My stomach is, I'm going to tell my stomach to stop yelling at me so that way I can allow for me to ask you this other question. Where can the listeners of Voices That Cook follow you?
You can find me over on Twitter at Eleanor Anwin, and, you can find the, Good Old Fashioned Foibles podcast on any of your podcasting apps or media platforms. But might be a while before there's another episode, but it is there, I assure you.
All good. And if you want to follow me, you're welcome to do so, as I mentioned earlier, on Instagram at The Voice That Cooks and on Twitter at Voice That Cooks. And if you're listening to this on a particular podcast app that lets you review the show, please do leave us a review and let us know what you thought of the show. And definitely please check out The Way Station, check out Hounds of Bedlam, and I will definitely let you guys know how those birria enchiladas turn out because, oh gosh, they look so good. Anywho, thank you all so much, and y'all have a wonderful rest of your day, and if your stomachs are making so much noise, I not only apologize, but I will say you have been warned. Have a good day.